not actually in where color.
I'm able to do a picture. Yeah. You make
it. Okay. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. We're going to, before we begin the official City Council meeting, do something fun and wonderful, which is thank someone who's done great service for the City of Portland, somebody who's shown grace under pressure, quick thinking, making the Portland building and the City Hall a safer place for everyone who visits, a guy who's a long way from his home in Trenton, New Jersey, but who saw fit to join the Portland community and has contributed to the safety of three administrations. He's going to be missed because this is his last week of work, and that's why we're celebrating him today. But we know that even one of the hardest working people in City Hall deserves a break. So we're here this morning to thank Ron Jefferson for his years of service to me, to the City Council, and the residents of our city. And Commissioner Fish has a proclamation to read on behalf of the Council.
Thank you, Mayor. Colleagues, I have the great honor of presenting this special proclamation on behalf of the Mayor and the Council. Before I begin, I'd like to ask our special guest, Mr. Ronald Jefferson, if he would take his seat at the dais.
Probably be okay if your wife wanted to join you at the table, too.
Hey. Cheryl, would you like to join? And so I'll read the proclamation. Whereas the City of Portland elected officials, staff, and visitors depend upon the professionalism and dedication of building security staff. And whereas Mr. Ronald Jefferson has served as city security for 7 years through the administrations of Mayors Potter, Adams, and now Hales. And whereas Ron's service to the city builds on 12 years of combined law enforcement and corrections experience and 17 years of security experience. And whereas Ron is an outstanding role model and mentor to his fellow security team members, and whereas Ron is known for his generosity and enthusiasm demonstrated by his kindness to members of the public and to city employees, and his willingness to go the extra mile for others, including his regular delivery of donuts to his coworkers. Whereas Ron brings great credit and distinction to his security team, his family, and the city he serves. Whereas after 7 years with the city, Ron is moving to a new position with TriMet. Now, therefore, I, Charlie Hales, Mayor of the City of Portland, the City of Roses, do hereby proclaim March 27, 2013, to be a day of recognition for Ronald Jefferson in Portland and to encourage all residents to observe this day. Ron, congratulations.
Thank you so very much.
It's been quite an honor and a privilege to serve the city of Portland, having came here just as so many others to make this my home. And I truly enjoy the environment, the effort that you put forth to reach out to all people. I can't say enough how much I appreciate everyone. Thank you so very much.
Thanks, Ron. Wish you well.
Ron, the mayor would like to get a picture with you as we hand this to you.
All of us?
Yeah, let's all get out there. Okay. Let's do it.
Outskirts of town says Trenton makes, the world takes. Yes. Your service to Portland is a classic example of that.
Okay, Let me welcome everyone to the March 27th meeting of the Portland City Council. And will the clerk please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Novick.
Here.
Hales.
Here. Communications items, we have five.
Item 247, request of Josiah Naylor to address council regarding scientific accuracy in the timing frequency of the community.
Mr. Naylor? Yes, good morning. Good morning. Just have a seat, and you have 3 minutes to just state your name for the record.
Josiah Naylor.
Welcome.
Thank you. The truth is that there are 13 months in a year. No one can single-handedly demolish the 12-month calendar. But it's got to go. It's faulty science. There simply are not 12 months in a year, but 13. Well, how, might you ask, do we change the calendar? It's not all that difficult, because it's based on the truth. What we need to do is individually embrace this knowledge and share it with everyone, especially the highest levels of government, teachers, and children. Our harmony with nature will be restored. Ushering in a golden age of peace and prosperity. Each person in this room is so powerful, equals, in fact, and equal to this task. I implore you, let not another day go by where man and nature are divided. And you didn't do everything in your power to close the gap. The implications of that schism are many and far-reaching. God made a calendar of 13 months. Man made one of 12 months. Who do you trust? Answer, in God we trust.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Item 248, request of Greg Madden to address council regarding involvement with the Portland Development Commission.
Morning, Mr. Madden.
Thank you, Mayor and Commissioners. Appreciate the time today. My name is Greg Madden. I own Madden Fabrication, which is a metal fabrication shop in the Northwest Industrial Area. I just want to take a moment today to just talk to you about my involvement today with the Portland Development Commission and some of the successes I've had running my business and operating with PDC's involvement. Early on in 1992, when my family started Madden Fabrication, we coordinated with PDC to fabricate some security fencing underneath the metal bridge, steel bridge, to improve the area around the newly developing Pearl and the Old Town Chinatown area. PDC reached out specifically to local Portland firms that were sized right for this type of project, and fortunately they selected Madden Fabrication. We worked alongside PDC to develop and fabricate 400 lineal feet of security fencing to deter camping and illegal activities under the west side of the steel bridge. Working with PDC, we created an area that was also security and free storage for the city of Portland for the retaining walls around the seawall for flooding issues like what happened in the early 1996. So it was a very successful project, but it also helped my business get started in the early days, and PDC was a crucial element of that. Over the years, we've also worked on many projects throughout the Portland area, developed by the Portland Development Commission. Those are the urban renewal areas, and those created work for my metal fabrication company, including canopies and storefront improvements, as well as many other construction firms in the Portland area. And about 5 years ago, Sam Adams required that liaisons from each of the bureaus attend the monthly Northwest Industrial Neighborhood Association meetings and other neighborhood association meetings throughout the city. PDC liaison Kevin Johnson brought PDC programs and development resources to our monthly meetings, and Kevin continues to do that to this day. Over the years, Kevin has introduced many fantastic PDC programs, along with the storefront and renewal area projects. PDC has been instrumental in organizing a much needed program for manufacturers called the Northwest Career Expo. It is a cooperation with local manufacturers, PDC, WorkSource, and Portland high schools. This annual event connects Portland youth and manufacturers seeking out additional employees and interested in their safe, rewarding, and well-paid manufacturing jobs in the Portland area. PDC has been instrumental in orchestrating this event and its success for both the job seekers and the manufacturers who have these jobs in the Portland area. Hopefully, you've seen or heard about the resurgence of manufacturing in the U.S. and the lack of skilled resources we're experiencing. I can tell you that after 22 years in fabrication and construction, I've seen the reality of a diminishing skilled workforce. It's affected my business as many other manufacturing facilities in the Portland area. Thanks to PDC's effort, they're planting the seeds requiring to help sustain the skilled labor. In early 2008, Kevin Johnson also introduced me to the city of Portland and a program that was instrumental or developed by Randy Leonard. It was the Portland Lou. And thanks to that, we have 7 in the immediate area, and we have several either being built or developed for cities such as Cincinnati, California, and Alaska. It creates over 2 jobs for a monthly period in my shop, and also furnishes many other fabricators and suppliers in the Portland area with work.
Thank you very much. You need to wrap up because you're
okay. Thank you. Yes.
Thank you so much. Now, we often hear from people with frustrations about what's not working at the city. It's nice that you took the time to let us know about something it is. So thanks so much.
Yeah, they've done an excellent job. So I just wanted to make that point. So thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Appreciate it.
Item 249, request of Carol Van Dyke to address council regarding support of our homeless brothers and sisters and suggestion to help.
Hey, Carol.
This is my first time.
Good morning. Well, just have a seat, and all you have to do is put your name on the record, and you have 3 minutes to tell us what's on your mind.
All right. Well, it's Carol Van Dyke, and I didn't realize it was only 3 minutes until the other day, and it takes me 3 minutes to read one side of these 38 suggestions, and so I can leave the rest.
Yeah, if you have a written document, you can leave it for us, and we'll make sure everyone gets copies.
I would like to do that. And actually, I presented this to Sam Adams on June 11, 2008, all in paper form, and it was all misplaced and lost. And then I lost my impetus to follow through. And I didn't circle things that were of any major importance to me, so we'll just I'll just read them, and there will be a brief pause. And
yeah, and we can make sure, again, if you've got a written document that's long and it takes you longer to deliver, then we can certainly make sure everyone gets copies and they won't be lost. So.
I think probably my most important thing that I would like to say really quickly is if we can make our human waste and our yard waste and food waste be used for methane and make fuel out of it as an alternative source of fuel. Anyways, I'll go here and read what I've got, and there'll be a pause. Space is created and provided for all to have a garden to tend. Encourage urban farming, gardening as a part of all schools' curriculum. Provide folks in prison the ability to grow organic gardens to give them good food and a renewed sense of self-worth. In Ireland, Scotland, England, and France, the wild ponies and horses live safely in national parks. We, too, can provide sanctuary for our wild horses in this country. Ban all chemical pesticides as the river is affected, as well as the water table. Permit only organic methods. A strong solution of vinegar to be used as an herbicide. Ban fireworks displays over the river to support a clean river. And I just mentioned about the sewage waste. Gray water must be filtered and reused for commercial purposes. Keep our drinking water free of fluoridation, as it is a toxin. Yes. Link with Port of Portland as they are implementing a porous pavement and other ways to help the environment. Focus on mass transport support powered by solar, electric, and magnetics, tax rebate for use of alternative energy sources in home and business, affordable health and dental care provided on a sliding fee, providing safe haven for the homeless. Everyone has a home regardless of their financial state. New housing for groups of folks built surrounding a large garden space in the middle so there's a place where all may be involved together in co-creation. I'm going to skip. The growing kanaf as an alternative to trees for paper making in eastern Oregon. Kanaf is a plant most of you are unfamiliar with. Then help minimize auto traffic. Folks working via computer may do it from home instead of having to drive in each day. Implementing a four-day work week with 10-hour days, two 15-minute and one 30-minute break. This will be beneficial for the environment and the individual's health and well-being. Both of these proposals will give folks more time with their families. Ban the use of gasoline-powered leaf blowers and lawn mowers. We can use a broom and rechargeable electric mowers or blowers. And planting of male ginkgo trees as street trees as they provide the highest oxygen of any tree, and the leaf is medicinal for human consumption. They are also slow growers, though a valuable gift to the city. And I'm going to do this quickly. City plantings having a dual purpose, providing food for humans and wildlife, focused on natives and hardy perennials. We need more community gathering spaces for free weekly potlucks, dancing, music, and a variety of ways to exchange with one another. I mentioned gray water already. Discontinue the use of chlorine and the other many chemicals added to our Bull Run drinking water and use filtration technologies. There's a fungi called King Strepharii. It has been proven to cleanse water of all toxic impurities when the water passes through its mycelium. That's enough.
Yeah, I want to stop you there because it's obviously a great list, and I appreciate it.
And you know what? I thought of many more ideas after this and never wrote them down, and I get ideas daily and space on them. And
Do leave it for us, please.
I will.
And we'll make sure everyone gets a copy.
I will. And if there's some way that you can create some sort of a little committee of concerned citizens to come together and create more and make something happen with it instead of just thinking about it, that'd be grand.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you coming in. Thank you.
Item 250, request of Megan Kender to address council regarding TriMet youth passes.
I'll take those, please.
Morning, Megan.
Megan Kender. I'm Megan Kender, and I'm currently a sophomore at the Metropolitan Learning Center. I would like to address a push for finding stable funding to keep the TriMet youth pass program alive. My twin sister and I take the bus every morning across the river and back again after school. I spend about an hour commuting for school via TriMet every day, as well as numerous hours attending sports practices, meetings, volunteer opportunities, babysitting, and other things throughout the week. This commute would be incredibly expensive for our family if we did not have the TriMet Youth Pass to depend on. I come from a low-income, single-parent family and have a little brother who will be commuting to high school as well in 2 years via TriMet. The cost of bus tickets or monthly bus passes would be extremely high. My brother is a Boy Scout, and I'm involved in sports, which we would not be able to afford if we had to pay for a bus pass for me and all of my siblings. Aside from the money aspect, the youth pass has helped me get involved in my community and given me an opportunity to learn how to use public transportation. The youth pass has given me the tools to be a successful transportation user and greatly shrink my impact on the environment. My story is one that many can relate to. I have talked with my peers about the youth pass and what it means to them, and the feedback has been immensely positive. Almost everyone I have inquired with uses their bus pass to commute to school or other vital places at least a few times a week. I have pulled quotes from letters written by students regarding keeping the TriMet Youth Pass program, and I have them here. So, one student said, "My youth pass has set the foundation for me to become a public transportation user, therefore having one less card on the road in the future. I hope that you will consider how the lives of high school students will be negatively impacted without the youth passes." Another quote. Going to MLC, we do not have a set mode of transportation such as school buses. MLC is not our neighborhood school, and people from all PPS boundaries go here. I personally live an hour bus ride away, and without my youth pass, I wouldn't be able to get to school. Another quote. I don't think it's fair to have students to pay so much on a yearly basis to get to school. Without the free bus pass, high school graduation become a financial impossibility for many of my friends and peers. The last quote. I believe the youth pass raises a generation of bus takers. Taking the bus has taught me so many important life skills I wouldn't have gotten without it. I know Portland so much better, and I know how to take the bus and interact with people. It also gives students an incentive and means to take the bus, which is a much more green option than driving. As you can see, the youth pass is an extremely important program to a vast majority of students in the Portland metro area. It creates a system that allows students to attend school without financial stress, promotes citizenship and community, and opens young people up to the possibilities of sustainable public transportation. It is more accessible, cost-efficient, and greener than yellow school buses or cars, and benefits students in our city in countless ways. This isn't new news, though. To quote you, Mayor Hales, having the students using the TriMet system and developing the habits of citizenship based upon using transit is wonderful. We should never lose it, so we've got to keep that Youth Pass program. Education and youth in Portland have been getting hit hard financially lately, and the money is there somewhere, and I'm asking you to please reopen the conversation on how we can continue funding the Youth Pass and recognize its importance. We truly need programs like this to stay off the chopping block for us to succeed and graduate. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for taking the time to come in during spring break to testify. That was wonderful.
So if I were to give you guys these letters.
Please. We'll make sure everybody gets a copy. Thank you. Good morning.
Hi.
Number 251, request of Haley Warnock to address council regarding city budget and youth programs.
Good morning.
Haley Warnock, and I'd like to thank the city council, by the way, for hosting us and having us come in today. I'd like to start with a quote from the 2013 monthly performance report of TriMet. Quote, this January is the first time that weekly bus riders have declined since July 2011. Unquote. I contend this fact is due to the raise in costs to the TriMet fare. However, regardless of this loss in weekly passengers, the passenger revenue has increased by 2.36% in the past year. So TriMet is losing passengers but making more money. With the loss of the student TriMet pass, it is guaranteed that the higher decline in loss of riders will happen. For there are rounded close to 50,000 Portland Public School students. Those students include those who live in hard-to-access areas, even with the assistance of TriMet, such as Selwood, the North Portland areas, or the West Hills. These students need TriMet to get to school and to home and to get to work and their college interviews. Some are like me, independent students without any parental assistance or aid. Being then a full-time dedicated student, affording the daily ticket price for the bus or max would simply not be manageable. Taking away the student bus pass would serve no one. Students would be stranded, and late arrivals and absences would increase due to the fact some days students simply couldn't afford to attend school, which detriments our schools and our students. Without the PPS youth pass, TriMet would also see a significant drop in riders, as well as have a negative connotation within the Portland Public Schools student population. And as we get more organized, we do intend to continue to have our voices heard regarding these issues. So many students are entirely dependent on TriMet, myself included. That all being said, I urge you to crunch some numbers and let us keep our passes for all our sakes. Thank you.
Thanks for coming. Thanks very much. All right, time certain. First item, please. Oh, sorry, consent. Doing it again. Okay, I don't believe we have any requests to pull items from consent. Are there none this morning? If not, then let's take the roll call on consent.
Fritz. I didn't pull it, but I want to note that item 264 refinances Civic Stadium bonds, saving taxpayers and spectator fund fee payers $2.5 million. And I just wanted to thank our debt service staff for their diligence. Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Novick.
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Approved. Now time certain.
252. Accept Commissioner in Charge and Portland Police Bureau annual report regarding the Portland Police Bureau participation with the Federal Bureau of Investigation Joint Terrorism Task Force.
Call up Chief Reese and anyone else from the Bureau that's going to assist him in the presentation. It's an important report and an important piece of transparency in terms of how the city relates to the federal government. So I'm glad that the council could set aside a significant amount of time this morning to hear the report and hear from the community. And with no further ado, take it from there, please, Chief.
Thank you, Mayor. I'm Mike Reese, Chief of Police of the Portland Police Bureau, and I have with me Assistant Chief Eric Hendricks, who assisted in overseeing our work with the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and City Attorney Dave Warborough, who provides oversight from the city attorney's office, as well as training to our officers that work with the FBI. And I want to thank counsel for the opportunity to present the report. It outlines our work with the Joint Terrorism Task Force led by the FBI in 2012. I want to add that the mayor and I have met with the FBI Special Agent in Charge, Greg Fowler, and Amanda Marshall, the U.S. Attorney, to develop a collaborative relationship on issues such as terrorism. The report in front of you defines our relationship with the FBI Joint Terrorism Task Force and the Police Bureau's compliance with the resolution allowing the Portland Police Bureau to participate with the FBI. And with that, I would open it up for any questions that council might have about the report.
Questions, concerns?
Mayor, I'll have some after testimony.
Okay.
I have a question about item 6 and the statement that a senior deputy city attorney has provided legal advice to the Bureau, et cetera, has met individually with all CIU members, identifies eligible to work with the JTTF, and the officers have been able to freely share information and seek advice from the city attorney. Does that mean, Mr. Wobrell, that you are familiar with the individual investigations that are going on and what work the officers are doing?
Yes, that's correct. They've been very forthcoming and open about what they're working on, and we have very good information for all of them.
Okay.
There's been a concern, of course, with security clearances.
Hold the microphone a little closer, Dave.
There's been concern about security clearances over the years and whether or not lack of security clearance held by me, for instance, would limit my ability to be certain that they're complying with council's requirements and the law. It hasn't been a problem. The conversations we have gotten very quickly to the information necessary to decide those questions. And I've not bumped up against any confidential information barriers that are preventing me from doing my work with them.
So you're familiar with how many investigations of what type are going on?
I am.
Okay. All right, thank you. That's good to know.
Another question. If you can have that information without having security clearance, why can't I?
The question is one of, I think, really how the city needs to do its business best. These are just like run-of-the-mill criminal investigations, confidential for very good reasons. It allows the criminal intelligence unit to actually get the work done effectively. This is always a question when you have public policy debates about it, the intelligence function of governments. You certainly need to manage it quite strictly, but also very, very important public policy needs to keep it confidential, the work itself confidential.
I think the FBI realizes that for our participation, there has to be a city attorney involved in providing information to our officers around compliance with Oregon state law and federal law. They would probably be reluctant to have us participate if there were more people involved in these confidential investigations. Their direction to us is to keep that information as narrowly confined as possible to protect the integrity of the investigations.
That's no questions.
Okay. Anything else at this point? And then we'll turn it open up for public testimony and need to call you back probably.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, let's take up the list.
All right. I'll call you four at a time. Please come up. David Fidanke, Jim Kennedy, Mary McWilliams, Casey Jama. And they'll be followed by Dan Handelman, Greg Kafori, Mary Eng, and Joe Walsh.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Commissioners, for the record, I'm David Fidanke, Executive Director of the ACLU of Oregon. I have submitted written testimony, and I will attempt to summarize that briefly this morning. This year's report is virtually identical to the report that Council received a year ago and has some of the same failings and lack of detail. The ACLU had testified in support of the Council resolution 2 years ago, which now governs the relationship between the Police Bureau and the JTTF. We did so despite our continued high degree of concern over the ability of the Bureau to navigate and respect the great differences between the very malleable federal guidelines and policies under which the FBI operates and the tighter restrictions of Oregon laws and the Oregon Constitution under which the city obviously operates. We remain concerned that the interactions between the Police Bureau and the FBI will inevitably lead to violations of Oregon law. Once again, missing from this year's report is specific data indicating the number of investigations, the types of investigations, at what stage of the FBI inquiries the Police Bureau was asked to work with the JTTF, and the total number of hours the investigating CIU officers worked on terrorism inquiries. While we believe that all of this information is important, the most critical is for the city to disclose the number and types of inquiries that could, in which our officers have participated. I want to emphasize the ACLU has never asked the city to disclose specific factual information regarding the individual matters on which the Police Bureau cooperates with the FBI. However, disclosing the number of inquiries and the stage of the inquiry at the time of the FBI request to the city would not disclose information that would compromise an ongoing inquiry or investigation. In 2011, we had urged that the resolution limit PPB involvement to only those inquiries designated as full investigations by the FBI. We took that position because those are the only investigations that require individualized suspicion in the FBI's work. Assessments and preliminary investigations account for a great deal of the FBI's anti-terrorism work, and those require no individualized suspicion of terrorist activity. If this data was disclosed publicly, and we learned that the Bureau was only involved in full investigations, a public concern about the interactions between the Bureau and the FBI would be greatly reduced. Conversely, if the Bureau is involved only in assessments and preliminary investigations, there would be a much greater likelihood the city was in violation of the resolution and Oregon law. Once again, we urge the Council, and particularly you, Mr. Mayor, as Commissioner in charge, to take steps to ensure that logs are kept on the number of inquiries and the stage at which those inquiries begin, so that if not this year, then in future years, this type of data can be disclosed publicly. And finally, we note the requirement for annual training of Police Bureau personnel who interact with the JTTF by the City Attorney's Office. We strongly encourage you, Mr. Mayor, and other members of Council to attend those trainings at least once. We also urge you to make that training curriculum public. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks,
sir. Good morning.
Folks, during the regular Council session, we ask that you not applaud. We loosen up for the communications items, but just raise your hands if you agree with someone, please. Thank you.
I'm Jim Kennedy with the Portland Japanese American Citizens League. I would like to start by acknowledging the amount of thought and effort that the city and the Portland Police Bureau have demonstrated to craft and implement the resolution to work with the JTTF. The efforts put in place to ensure PPB resources are not used in violation of state law against spying without criminal suspicion are laudable. And, for example, the chief's report mentions training and access by and to the city attorney for Portland police officers to understand the Oregon laws and civil liberties. This is good practice, and we acknowledge that. We also understand that the city feels some obligation to participate in the JTTF to protect our city against threats of terrorism. However, we are dubious of the effectiveness of having PPB resources work on FBI directives because of the secretive nature of FBI investigations are an affront to the open and citizen-focused government for which Portland is noted and for which we are proud. While the city's report may meet the requirements stipulated in the JTTF resolution, it falls very short of proper disclosure regarding how and to what degree Portland Police Bureau resources were used in JTTF investigations. The absence of disclosure makes it impossible for Portland residents to determine if the Portland Police Bureau resources were involved in effective activities or, more concerning, involved in activities that compromise the civil rights protecting Oregonians from having information gathered on them without proper criminal suspicion. In this regard, the chief's report offers little comfort to Portland JACL. Section 1 of the report states that the Portland Police Bureau have implemented policies, procedures, and oversight mechanisms that enable us to effectively investigate terrorist threats, protect civil rights and civil liberties, and promote an open and inclusive community. Unfortunately, we feel any endeavor with the FBI defies openness, and however rigorous the mechanisms may be, the fact is they are wrapped in secrecy due to the nature of working with the FBI. Throughout its existence, the FBI has demonstrated that their priorities of enforcement to protect the American people override the civil rights of the very citizens that they strive to protect. Simply stated, the FBI's priorities do not align with the goal of promoting an open and inclusive community. This remains as true today as in 1942, when Japanese Americans were targets of the FBI enforcement's actions. In 2011, during the debate regarding the resolution to work with the JTTF, Portland JACL was criticized for bringing up the violations of civil rights imposed upon Japanese Americans by the FBI during World War II. World War II was deemed too far in the past to be relevant to the current situation with terrorism. However, in our community, we can still listen to firsthand accounts of those times when the FBI disregarded the civil rights of our forefathers in pursuit of their enforcement objectives. So it is still a very real issue to us. During World War II, it was easy to target Japanese Americans because we looked similar to and possibly had sympathies with our enemy. In 1988, the United States Congress and the President apologized for the grave injustice of citizens and resident aliens of Japanese ancestry for actions that were carried out without adequate security reasons and without any acts of espionage or sabotage, and were motivated largely by racial prejudice, wartime hysteria, and the failure of political leadership. 70 years after Pearl Harbor and 11 years after 9/11, we fear the FBI continues to prioritize their enforcement goals over civil rights of our citizens, particularly of Arab and Muslim Americans, in an unending war against terrorism. Arab and Muslim Americans today distrust the FBI, and the JTTF resolution extends distrust to the Portland Police Bureau. The resolution to work with the JTTF, however carefully crafted, places in question the city's priorities to protect the civil rights of its residents, and unfortunately, the chief's report, veiled in secrecy, only adds to the suspicion that the Portland Police Bureau are involved in unwarranted searches and investigations. Certainly, the report offers the citizens of Portland no ability to weigh the effectiveness of the JTTF program, and so we are dependent upon the oversight of the City Council, and specifically the mayor as commissioner in charge, to judge the effectiveness and weigh it against the trust and comfort of its American and Muslim residents. We call upon you to not let any citizens of Portland have their civil rights compromised by city employees or become disenfranchised from the city or the Portland Police Bureau by imposing this air of secrecy around a city-sanctioned program. Portland JACL requests the City Council to put an end to the resolution to work with the JTTF and bring openness and inclusiveness back to the top of Portland's priorities. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and City Commissioners. I'm very impressed with the closed caption. I can understand what's being said much better. I'm Mary McWilliams, representing the League of Women Voters of Portland. The League of Women Voters believes democratic government depends on informed and active participation, and that the public's right to know must be protected.
We value the protections afforded by Oregon law to individuals engaging in political and other non-criminal First Amendment activities. The resolution adopted by Council in 211 is intended to ensure that our officers abide by state law and that they investigate only when a reasonable suspicion of criminal behavior exists. Although there is some information in the report on the chief's process for making these determinations, more is needed on which factors are considered and how decisions are made. How does the mayor provide oversight before he receives a security clearance? Should the city attorney also be consulted on each case? Whether our officers are at risk of violating the public's right and Oregon law is of critical importance to the community. The League recommends requiring the city attorney and independent police review division director to regularly review all JTTF files created with Portland police officers' participation. Any files collected in violation of Oregon law should be purged. Periodic review by those independent parties would provide confirmation that the protections we have as Oregonians are being honored. Last year, a number of questions were raised, and they remain unanswered. Have our officers participated in any assessments or preliminary investigations? How many hours have our officers devoted to their JTTF assignments? To what extent is that affecting work on local public safety? In light of current budget pressures, this is especially critical. How many cases required their involvement, and how many are closed? How did the mayor participate in the management and supervision of bureau staff? We urge council to insist on more disclosure and oversight so we can be certain this relationship meets the community's expectations. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today.
Thank you.
Thanks very much. Mike is.
Good morning, Mayor Ellis and Commissioners. My name is Ethan Jama. I am the Executive Director of the Center for Intercultural Organizing. Mayor Ellis, thank you very much for your comments and commitment for civil liberties for all Portlanders that you made yesterday publicly. So I want to thank you, first of all, for that. Secondly, I spent some time last night trying to shuffle through the report and trying to make sense out of it, whether this is a significantly improvement than what we saw last year, and also if this information that's been provided by the city and by the chief is sufficient enough to put to rest my concerns about the city's and the Portland Police collaboration with the FBI. My agency has worked this issue for many years. We were worked on during this Mayor Tom Border when the city of Portland pulled out the JTTF, and I think that was the right decision at that time also. When I read this report, one of the things that I come out, it actually, instead of resting questions that I had, I actually developed more questions, and I have never understood the conclusion of this report. My question has not been answered. It actually created more fear for me that as a resident of the city of Portland, we absolutely have no clue what the PPS is doing with the FBI. The report, a lot of questions. We don't know how many cases. We don't know how many times. We don't know how much money that has been spent on the city budget to investigate. I agree with Jim's comments about the reality is that what we're dealing with is the nature of the FBI investigation and the secrecy around this issue makes it very, very difficult as a resident of Portland to have any confidence that any civil liberties of Muslim and Arab community members are being protected, and all Portland residents. I'm not convinced that report provides us for that. My point at this point is that I agree. When I read the report, I think one of the things that I came to conclusion to me was that I have a great respect with Chief Freeze. I think he's a wonderful man, but I could not
come to conclusion beyond saying that the police chief saying that read my lips, you have nothing to worry about. That's the conclusion that I come up with. And as a citizen, as a resident, that is not a good enough. FBI have used it questionable tactics across the country, including the recent case Muhammad, that I am not confident that we can trust the relationship is going to be more open into our public. So my conclusion and request from you is that we need to stop. We need to not accept this report. And we should also reexamine our partnership with the FBI office in Portland. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for any of these folks? Council? Thank you very much.
Next, we'll have Dan Handelman, Greg Cafori, Mary Eng, Joe Walsh. They'll be followed by Mark Sherman, Charles Johnson, Jason Cafori, and Teresa Roberts.
Morning. I think, Dan, you're on first.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch. We have, Mr. Mayor and Council, we are deeply concerned about the JTTF report barely containing any more information than last year's threadbare version. We continue to support the ideas floated at City Council last year by members of the public and Commissioner Fritz to make a more comprehensive report. The new report is nearly a verbatim copy of last year's report with only a few exceptions, including that after stating how revealing how many cases the Bureau has helped the FBI, the JTTF investigate, may compromise their investigations, and that's something that still makes no sense to us. The chief says the Bureau has worked on at least one domestic terrorism case. That's not a number. Whereas last year the chief stated the officers did not work outside the city of Portland, this year he says he assigned officers to work on one JTF investigation outside the city of Portland, but it's unclear whether he means this year is 2012 or 2013 in the context of the whole report. It's unclear whether they worked within Oregon, outside of Portland, or if they left the state. Explaining why the officers received secret clearance instead of top secret clearance, the report states the difference would only be if the officers needed to access FBI facilities or informant source information. The chief reports he does not need clearance above the secret level to manage the officer's work, but he doesn't say whether he might seek to obtain that level of clearance anyway. That his clearance level might be higher than the mayor and commissioners is the main reason Mayor Potter pulled out of the JTTF in 2005. The chief says he conferred on several occasions with the FBI special agent in charge and receives briefings a few times a year, but it still doesn't make sense why the number of meetings should be classified information. Last year's link to the standard operating procedure for the JTTF, when you follow it online, now goes to a generic page for the Police Bureau, so it's not clear whether that standard operating procedure has been taken out of the public domain. Last year, we wrote a letter outlining the deficiencies in the reports. We asked for more detailed information, particularly how many hours officers were working given the tight city budget and exactly how many cases were involved. The new report does not adequately address any of the concerns raised in that letter. The most concerning one is that the term criminal nexus is still not defined, and we believe the FBI will invoke the need for Portland police at a lower threshold than would be appropriate under Oregon law. There are several requirements in the resolution for the commissioner in charge, but the commissioner has not issued his own report this year, so we don't know, other than a few mentions by the chief, whether the commissioner fulfilled all his duties under the agreement. Also, the resolution requires the city attorney to check in with the Oregon Attorney General each year to be sure that Oregon law is fulfilled, but no report is required from the city attorney either. There are still no names in this report, even though we had people come up to the table and identify themselves. The names of Chief Hendricks and City Attorney Wobrell are not in the report. It doesn't make sense why those are redacted, perhaps, from this report. And just as a quick note, since my time is up, the Communications Work of America provided their written testimony, which I've given you, and the National Lawyers Guild was unable to prepare testimony due to the short amount of time the report was available. And their absence underscores the testimony from February last year, urging the resolution require the reports to be issued. Oh, from February of this year, urging the resolution require the reports to be issued at least 2 weeks before being presented to council, which you remember.
Thank you. Good morning, Greg.
Morning. The Portland Police Department's organizational bonds with
the FBI. Put your name in the record, Greg. Sorry.
My name is Gregory Kufuri. The Portland Police Department's organizational bonds with the FBI should be terminated. The FBI's law enforcement functions are basically a front. The FBI is our domestic secret police. From the
Please, please, let him finish. Let him continue, please. Ma'am, let him continue. He's here.
From the tyranny and witch hunts of the McCarthy era to the vast majority of terrorism prosecutions today, the pattern is clear. When real enemies are scarce, potential enemies are targeted, and from there it is a small step to creating enemies. Today, the FBI has paid infiltrators attending mosques across the country trying to incite young Muslim men to say or do something stupid. Every major city, some 57 in all, has ultimately knuckled under to the demand that the FBI have a foothold in local police departments. How important is it that one city, even just one, declare and maintain its independence? Consider the history of the Black Panther Party. Black Panther rhetoric was incendiary, but their actual programs were health clinics, free breakfast programs for hungry kids. Yet in the early 1970s, there was a wave of murderous military-style police assaults on Black Panther Party headquarters. They were falling like dominoes across America's major cities. Critics cried that the FBI was behind it, but that was denied all around. We were assured it was just local. Then federal agents came to Wes Ullman, the mayor of Seattle, with a secret proposal for an attack in his city. Seattle's mayor not only stopped them cold, but he went public and told what had happened. And after that, there were no more military-style attacks on Panther headquarters. Consider the COINTEL program, the FBI's project for burglaries, black bag jobs, and illegal wiretaps. How do you suppose that went unrecognized for more than 10 years? Let's put it in the form of a question. If tomorrow a lawyer's office or an activist's office was burglarized in Portland and the burglars were caught by our police, would a phone call invoking national security lead to the burglar's quiet release and the cleansing of the files? Or would the agency be told to tell it to a judge? How important is it that one city maintain its independence?
Thank you very much. Thanks. Good morning. You're on. No, you had it. There you go.
Testing? All right. Hello, my name is Mary Yang. I propose that the AHA Foundation be brought to the Portland Police and FBI and JTTF. A representative of the AHA Foundation has agreed to train FBI of Oregon in Islamic cultural issues. I was deeply saddened at the FBI's alienating approach, which will sever our ties to immigrant and Islamic communities. The desperate need to stop female genital mutilation and honor killing and honor violence in immigrant and religious communities is an immediate need, which FBI has continued to sabotage on a local and national level in favor of their male-centric bomb obsessionalism, a waste of precious resources which may contribute to the further suffering of women in at-risk communities. I have presented the work of Ayan Hirsi Ali to you all, City Council, before, and I am thrilled that she, a Somali woman refugee, has agreed to help train the FBI of Portland to become less racist and start to see the big picture about the human rights of women. I'm sorry to report to you a disturbing conflict of interest revealing that indicting attorney Holden was text messaged before the fake bomb hoax and was then promoted to FBI after indicting FBI's chosen target. Holden must be reported to the American Bar Association and the OBA for misconduct. Another saddening aspect of the new Khan case is that notorious prosecutor Ethan Knight has decided to sit on his indictment to affect the outcome of the Muhammad case. Such conflict of interest was highly suspicious to the judge who let Khan go on bail, as Ethan Knight had let the Khan indictment kick around for 2 months while he waited on the outcome of the Muhammad case, which he served on. This professional misconduct must be reported to the bar, and firstly to you, Fluoride Cancer City Council. I am honored to speak to you today about the Joint Terrorism Task Force, a post-9/11 way the FBI has sought to regain the loss of reputation they endured therein. Do not be fooled by phony show trials, monkey courts, three-ring cyber arena circuses, or witch hunts. The FBI is lacking in most basic protocol instruction for professionalism and code of conduct. Their destruction of evidence in the case of Muhammad is but one folly. The fact their dubious non-consensual secret movies were considered as evidence without secret tech expert witness refutation of the methods and means of producing the FBI bombshell reality series is of deep concern. I must point out to you Mario Galindo. He spoke about the we got a lot of woodies up here when they honed in on their target, Somali refugee teen Mohammed, who another FBI agent, Isaac DeLong, has said was too vulnerable, too young, too drug addicted, too drunk, too high, too vulnerable, and too conflicted to get involved in a fake bomb hoax, of which we are all the victims. We are the victims of the hoax. I'd like to point out to you that the rape DNA is not being tested, the database errors, wax suit against the FBI. We don't have enough police to trust. They're sexually harassing like crazy, and we've got Nazis on our police. This is ridiculous. And look at the Oakland bomb case. They're preying on a mentally ill man with a pronounced mental illness record. And they're saying, hey, we got you a fake bomb. You know why? Because San Francisco put their foot down and said, no, FBI, we're not taking it. Watch Mueller yourself on C-SPAN and see how he doesn't know what's going on. The wool's being pulled over his eyes, too. We need to get more integrated services for women, anti-discrimination, civil liberties. I commend you and thank you, Hale, for talking about the siphoning off of our funds for their budget shortfalls. Mueller will say so himself. He's trying to do it across America. Thank you. And I do want an appointment, and I have been denied by your assistant.
Thank you for coming.
And thanks. I won't
speak. All right. Good morning, Joe.
My name is Joe Walsh. I represent Individuals for Justice. And we've taken a different direction on this. As we looked at the report in total, and agreeing with Dan that the report itself is very similar to the report last year. And it's ambiguous. You don't learn anything from the report. My understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're going to make a decision today whether to accept this report or reject it. And our position is you should reject it, because it doesn't give you the information that we were guaranteed a year ago when the ACLU and other organizations said, okay, we're safe. And we're not. And you know it. So we're saying to you, say to the chief of police, go back and do your job. Tell us what went on. Don't tell the public if it's a violation of some secret. But you, all of you, should know, because you are our representatives, and we want a report to understand how much the FBI is controlling our police department. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we'll have Mark Sherman, Charles Jordan, Jason Kafori, and Teresa Roberts. And then they will be followed by Sarah Hobbs and Nancy Newell.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Mark Sherman. I'll just give you a few anecdotes about my experiences in my interactions with the FBI over a long period of time. But first, I'll say that I want to thank whoever did that report for basically using last year's report and just changing the date. Probably saves a lot of money. In these times, that's important. The FBI, when I had first gotten involved or had contact with them, I asked them, or there was a discussion we had about recruitment, who gets to be in the FBI? And it was very clear that you get to be in the FBI if you believe like the FBI believes. And so Republicans were in and Democrats were out. There's a couple other things I've found out about the FBI is that you take an oath to the Constitution, but for them, that means to the superior who's giving you the orders, because ultimately that comes from the president. So an oath to the Constitution means an oath to the president. So any directive you're giving, whether it's legal or not, is within the constitutional bounds to do so. And when you see that and you ask, well, how was it that the FBI could do, I guess, all the things that were mentioned before? Why didn't a single agent stand up and say, hey, what we're about to do is illegal, it's against the Constitution, we can't do that? You don't hear that. It's because that's not part of that mentality. So if something was going to happen illegal in the city of Portland, I guarantee you no FBI agent is going to come to Mayor Hales or anybody else and say, guess what, this is something that you need to put your foot down and stop because it's not right. That doesn't happen. The agents that I knew were involved in spying on anything that was, quote, progressive. Anything that was progressive was considered potentially subversive, and they were assigned to places where they could follow people who were doing whatever, I guess, the government.